This is the second side of this table, and Paul Goranovich is still talking here with every week.
You go there too, you know, and work in the rack, you know. You can get a rack, sometimes just stick the rack, you know, and on top, and the bracket, and by that, 3-4 colors. And I really always, I did all over that part for me. But I don't know, 1 year, I can't no more.
Well, we're getting so old, they have to find other people who do the actual work.
Are there some nice cabins by the ship up there?
Not on the Astrodome,
there's no
cabin.
I'm going
to
get a fire
tomorrow. I took a whole roll of pictures, man, put in the next row, so we come down the road.
Some cabins,
huh? No, see, I was all right, said, last year, you know, I used that time to create the system of mining and things, and showing how to mine it, and how to extract the gold from the rock and everything, you know. And I come home, and I work over 14 hours a day every day, and call me every day, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had quite a few clams, I got 7-8 clams, and I had to have them. And go over to the clams, I come in about 9 o'clock, and I stop it, and I call my daughter, because I've been there and there, and
Well, I just hope something can be done to stop the state from grabbing all this potentially valuable mining land and converting it to surface uses, and they've got millions of acres without touching it.
Well, they'd be very foolish if they did it. I don't believe they will.
They come out to Paul to give up some of his land already. Tell me about it. What if it's surface use?
Well,
there's so many new ones coming in, they don't know anything about the country, and they just assume too much.
That's why I think, no matter what party is in power, no matter what a man's politics is, he should be hired as
preferable. A little bit, just a little bit of time, then more.
Outsiders coming in here, because the outsider coming in here and building a road.
On you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. And all these 6 weeks and that. 24
even. And, you know, when I was moving house from that set, and this is a deal was coming from down the road.
Yeah.
And the road were all blocked up, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had that cat, you know, two cats, the one was blowing and the other one pushing.
So, I want to ask Mr. Reed to tell me about his problem he had here when they he got his license back, his mining engineer license. Let him tell us on the tape.
Did you have any cigarettes?
Good. Well, Mr. Helwick, Bartholomew Corporation here. Mining engineer for many years for the company.
Yeah, I know him.
He came to me and said if there wasn't any mineral conveyors in this part of Alaska, that Julio hadn't found it possible to keep on with it and didn't want to have any more to do with letting his commission lapse. And the only men they could get were men that would come in from the outside to do this work. And it would cost him to do it, it cost him $1,000 a claim. I guess just a razor patent. And then there were other patent costs on top of it, which was only another $1,500 and make it prohibitive from patenting that claim. And yet they didn't want it not to be patented because they were afraid the state stepping in and taking it away from the technicality. So I said, all right, I've known George Ellis a long time, and I've known him for the last 25 years. And I had this license before, cost me $1 million before I gave it up. I was on the ground floor and couldn't sink any ground or get it out of any mining proposition.
You
couldn't dig up a homestead, but I thought, well, I'm too old to take up a homestead, and I'm too old to do any mining now, so I guess it doesn't make any difference. I'll take it up again. Just to please him. And so I made an application for the commission again. And these people here, the land office here, the Bureau of Land Management, was tickled to death to give it to me. They even sent a man up there, he was up here, had an interview with me on Anchorage. Apologized for not seeing me sooner and told me how he was glad I was doing it and wanted me to take a physical and have a physical examination so everything was sure and still cover up to all the questions. And then I get a letter here that in May, that after several months after I made the application from Washington, that they were going to refuse it because I was 73 years old. And they said that was the policy of a Bureau of Land Management to retire any man when he became 70 with exceptions. Well, I agree with that policy because if a man gets 70 and he can't do his work, well, then he's retired without any figure being pointed at him and getting penalized or anything. But if he's doing his work all right, then they make an exception and let him go right along. Well, a mineral surveyor is only an employee of the Bureau of Land Management by courtesy, by just the name only. He didn't get any money from him. It shouldn't apply to him. He said, I know that a lot of the mineral surveyors are over 70. I'll bet you 95% of them are over 70. You can't get the
young ones don't take it up
to do that anymore because it is an uncertain way of making a living, and they want something that's certain. They want a job where they get paid for the month, and they want a big business they run themselves. They don't want to go and hunt for a wait for somebody to bring in for a claim to be surveyed, and they want to go out and take a claim. They want to stake it. And at home, they don't want to tie it down to it. A lot of set of stakes. So you can get the young folks to take it up, just like Julio wants to do that. So,
I saw what Bartlett was interested in.
Everybody was very much concerned. So, George Ellis wrote back to Remington, the head of the Bureau of Land Management. And I wrote to Bartlett. And I got a telegram right away back.
Well,
Well, what brought this about, precipitated, was this state land acquisition deal, was it overriding the mining interest to Babbitt?
Well, I presume it, because I don't know.
See, I heard the bill went two ways, that any state lands that they acquired, that their claims were not surveyed, and surveyed and recorded within 2 years, the state would take them over.
Well, yes, I suppose that's going to put a terrible burden on the claim owner. I don't see how they could enforce that.
Well, the state's done funny things.
Because, that's true, like this road business that I'm in here now. But I hope to get that thing down.
Well, they're going right through my...
There is back on that.
They're going through my place down there, right diagonal, right in front of the cabin, and I told them to stay out of there. I even pulled their stakes on them. And they right back there, they're surveying, they got a drill working in there and everything, right on my place. And they put $180,000 bridge in there 2 years ago.
That's law that the federal legislature wanted to appeal, the law of taking. Hmm. Where you take the land, and then you go to court to pay that. But a lot of the states have that law, but
they don't refuse it like that. Though.
They don't, it isn't refused. The whole thing is they say, well, there's been no right of way or anything, it's just a use right of way. Here where they have a use right of way, they claim they own 66 feet. And where they get 66 feet, I guess. Where it's on the section line, why you might go back to their own, somebody in the Middle West, homestead where they were 640 acres. Allowed 33 feet on this side of a section line. My place and the rest of these places that I'm rolling along the section line, well, 6 feet wide, I feel right out of the air. I can't see that. I think they're expropriating land without just compensation.
They aren't paying anything for your place either. They aren't here.
They haven't made any deal, but they have with some of the neighbors down all day. They've gotten made tentative values and easements with some of my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, I objected.
I've got an easement with you, but you've never given them that as an old homestead, have you?
It's 1923 patent.
Well, there's no way in which they can get that land except by this business and they make this 66 and this is 6. They
have
to pay, they're
going to
take 100 feet or 200 feet
to the patent that shows 66 feet. The patent shows 66 feet for the Richardson Highway.
Oh, does it?
Oh, yes.
Well, that land's probably on there. That's
it's surveyed and recorded.
There's no survey on this one at all.
Well, this is surveyed and recorded.
Yeah. Well, we may have a right there on that.
In 20 years, they've moved that road 3 times. They've moved the highway 3 times, the Richardson Highway. So they built a $180,000 bridge on my place down there 2 years ago and completed it. And here 2 years later, they're going to go and move that bridge 200 feet and move the road right up in front of my cabin.
Well, why should they move it up there when the ground is bad? They should move it towards the river the other way.
And they just won't do it.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. These fellows that have brought in from the outside that have never designed a road for this country, they're designing these roads and they have no idea of closing ground that's too good to deal.
Have you heard anything about the ground, the Jewish property over on Badger Road, where they run a road right through his place after he died and his wife's up here now, and I understand they're going to take it to court. The contractor went in there without easements and he's going to have to put everything back just like it was.
I've got mine in their own engineers, the Coleman engineers working for them down here, are in court with me on the same deal. They own this piece down here, over the
town. Why did they make that expense in the fact that they haven't
finished their house yet?
Well, these guys are they're little teams, so they get these jobs. They have power. They're going to exercise that power. That's the only thing they
put a garden in and all.
I realize.
work up on that.
I can understand that.
It looked to me like they're trying to kill the economy in Alaska, but all this regulation.
But if
we
go
poor,
of course, that's the tendency of the time.
Here they come along and take a
that is what made America great. Freedom has made America great.
Well, let's stop the Sunday afternoon visit with
and go
and leave this little conversation on here. It's just for the record.
I
get traces of platinum right here in the slough.
Platinum.
We did get some traces right here in the Fairbanks slough.
I think I know where that comes from.
Steamboat slough.
I know where it comes from.
You do? It was very small, and when we picked these little particles up, these gray and silver colored particles, and examined them, we couldn't tell. We thought somebody put some tinfoil on the ground. But it was traces of platinum.
Platinum was in a dense queue and a dense.
Yeah, I saw that. That's what it looked like, a little gray like that.
Yeah, that's platinum.
But that was right here off the College Road where we turned out.
I think I know where the formation is right. I don't know the platinum there, but the formation is right.
Well, he spoke about those copper signs up around Black Rapids. I remember seeing those formations, but I didn't know anything about them.
Yeah, I went over up, and you go over 3,000 feet, and you can see creek go that mountain is go that way. That go right creek that way.
Well, hasn't the army got that withdrawn now?
It's right in that army section there. Yeah, I know where it is. Right, that recreation camp.
Army,
you know where it is?
Yeah, right.
That military recreation camp.
Is that very big? You know?
Well, there's a lot of it exposed there.
How far from the glacier? Oh, it's right pretty close. Not
right close to the glacier there. I remember seeing those signs.
Long creek and all there, that's pretty close there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been looking for uranium in a fifth size creek, you know. I was interested in uranium, you know. I find it all but all little uranium, not very much, you know. Canyon, you know. But finally, I went to the other end. But four days, I was, you know, a lot of sheep there, all kinds. And finally, I see that Richard said, John Edupus, he was asked to go. And I said, well, let's go, John. And John didn't know what to do. I told him. And nobody go. And finally, Jerry McBee wanted to go, but he can't make it either. And, but it's a little brick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make yourself pull down and pull yourself.
Cross, you know, I know it's cable bridge. Well, that's right above the roadhouse there, isn't it? It's above it, yeah.
Yeah.
About the mile and a half, 2 miles above the roadhouse.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Mile and a half, 2 miles above the roadhouse.
Yeah.
You can get across there, but is that below the,
that's
across the big
down
the river? Is that below the glacier or above it?
Across the river.
Below the glacier, across the river.
I know.
Downstream.
Upstream.
Where it goes from bridge.
Just downstream below the glacier.
Yeah, you can see glacier go up and you go seaside and you go right from glacier.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. But not very far from glacier, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can see, you know.
I saw that stream.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's a long time ago. Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
All right. But I don't think that I had somewhere to go and I would look for uranium, see. And I had so many creek over there and I didn't want more, you know. But I had, I had mining in a big delta. I go inside the area there. It's a big cliff, you know. And inside, but 50 feet inside in a tunnel, I went to see, and they got filled up, you know. But I didn't know who was mining, you know. Not very far from that early camp, you know.
Not from very far from Greeley?
Yeah, not very far from there. Mm-hmm.
That's over where Hajdukovic had some of his horses and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that, yeah. Mm, there was trace of silver over there, I heard about a long time ago.
Yeah. Then John Hajdukovic had molybdenum.
Molybdenum.
I met look there. Good, but quite good. And I got in a good factor when I was mining there. I find molybdenum and over 50 feet. You know, you see a rock to go white truck, and you can see just Breckland and molybdenum. I sent to Johnny Buddle, you know, his good friend of mine, and to say, and 85% in the college.
Mm-hmm. And this is just got Conrad, and he was over there with that molybdenum.
Yeah, he was partner with John.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They couldn't build a
little field,
you know, to land it in the end, and do a test for it. Nobody wants molybdenum.
Well, that's right at the end of that edge of that gas experimental area that they've got up at Big Delta now. You see, they've got a place where they test gas, poison gas. The military has. It's right on the edge of that.
No, gas is farther down. You just said, I guess, there was a road house, and you can see a Click Creek go right up.
Riley Creek?
Uh-huh, yeah. Rapid road house right here. And
that's where the health camp is. Talking about where the health camp is.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's where that Army Recreation Camp is.
Yeah.
I know where that is. But they've got cribbing on that creek, because that creek has high water sometimes.
Yeah,
they've got cribbing on both sides there by the road.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, the good water comes down.
Yeah.
But the army's been running the weasels up
there. Lots of ships, too. Hold up, river ships. Yeah.
I've seen the ship come clear, putting it down the road on that side.
No,
there. Oh, no.
I got up there, 13 ships one day, and finally I can get them all, you know. I get all and pack them little by little, garnered everything down. And finally, when I get to camp, Bailey came in with a lady together, partner, you know. And he was visiting. And I come in there in the cabin. I had either the Tarako cabin, you know, either the Tarako cabin.
Cabin cabin?
We are from a Rapa Tarot house, but mine on the right side. That was the Tarako cabin. Mm-hmm. And finally, I had there a nice cabin, you know, and the sleeping. Beer and the beer and everything. I said, what the heck is that? And my doctor found out barely complete. He come and that was just me and Zuko was there, you know.
Yeah.
And that's pretty galactic, but he knows, you know. And pretty galactic, finally we told him, we got a lot of sick. And I said, okay, we test everything to best trick, you know, hardening layer, I don't know. He got kept it there.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, little by little, we give them something to eat, test a little bit, and then no work, you know, and we use some meat, you know. Oh, yeah, I got lots of sheep.
No more sheep.
Yeah,
might get across the river, you might get one.
Well, I go way up in the glacier, I go way up, but there's too many soldiers.
Well, they was rotating them from Milton and Greeley and out here from this field up there. Have a 100 of them staying up there in the camp, and they'd be every day out in the hills.
With
the guns, with the machine guns and everything. They shoot at everything and moved.
Well, of course.
Oh, yeah.
The waiting was scary across the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then up here, and what do you call it?
What are we going to do when we get this this park now?
Well, the first thing is you're going to have to, after we get the approval and everything settled, then we have to hold an election and elect our board members.
That's right. But after
that's
get,
the next move.
Then we got the board members, and they got to get busy.
They got to make a set of bylaws and rules up
who,
and submit them.
What this memorial park they've got? Who's
well, that's it. That's the city. That'll die a natural death. That was that stunt they did to try to stop us.
Yeah,
don't you remember they called the dump Pedro dump? Don't you remember? And I went up to the council about it. You remember I went up there?
That's on the curve of the river there.
Yeah, but you remember that there was a meeting we had there, and the city was going to call that Pedro Memorial Park down on the city dump, and I went up to the council and told them that Pedro was a miner and his home was on the creek and he didn't live in town. He'd come in town and throw his money around, and I introduced Frank Young as a member of the Geographic Board of Names. You remember that? Yes, you see, Frank Young is the only member in the state of Alaska of the Geographic Board, the state Geographic Board, only civilian member. And the governor appointed him. Well, he is supposed to transmit his information to the federal Geographic Board in the naming of important places, mountains and peaks and other things, and to reduce the duplication of names and the identification of names and the reason for the names. So I objected to the City of Fairbanks Park and Recreation Board assuming that they could name any park after a historical person without consulting the Geographic Board. And I took the council up on it. Don't you remember that?
I wasn't here.
So I introduced them up there, and of course I floored them all. They stopped cold.
I wondered why they got this memorial park.
Well, they assumed that. That
near Memorial Park.
That was that city planning park and
they wanted us to take it over.
Well, they were going to make us take it. That was what they intended to do. They were still asking me why we couldn't take the 32 acres they got down there in the city dump and give them that 72 acres. I told them I couldn't do it because we applied for it legally and it was granted it. And I, as an individual, couldn't give them nothing. They should know better than that.
Well, sure. Did you bring it down from here to Healy and across on the other side and what you call a creek?
You mean Healy on the railroad?
Yeah. There is a creek, quite a bit, Tanana
River?
No.
Nina River?
No.
There's Eva Creek, and there's Polka Creek, and there's Hosanna Creek, and there's Savage River, and there's Popovich Creek, and there's Sangini Creek, and...
Oh, you know, when there's been what's the name?
Tempe?
No, it's mining there, and it was Jimmy Zuko and me had a ground there, and across the museum, across the other place, you know.
Catalina.
So Catalanica?
Catalanica.
No, just across the river, go about 75 miles, and the Gore Creek, we had in Rock. You know, you could end up in
the north. That's up on Jumbo Mountain?
I think so, there. You know, you've been down there?
No, I haven't been.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's one of the places
I've
been. There used to be a road in there.
Yeah, oh yeah. I was
a little... There's on Eureka Creek and...
Well, you're going from Ferry then. Didn't you on the old Ferry Trail?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
That's where Barlow and Kosky and old Robbie and them was,
yeah.
And that's where Miss Hyde and Diebold went one time.
They used to, Miss Hyde and Diebold, he ran those mountain trails, you know, he was running his little old Ford car and she claimed that he was trying to kill him. His car just killed him too, if you don't know.
He told me about a pack train of horses that went in, there were seven or eight of them. And of course, he figured that Debo was trying to kill her all the way in and all the way out. She told me all about it.
Yeah, she told me all about it, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, was
That's
the end of the tape on this one, so I'm going to clip it off for now. And this will wind up this afternoon's recording here of Paul Zivanovich and Irvin McKay Reed and Harry Hughes on a Sunday afternoon trip and visit to the mining camp. Now this is the second part on the second side of this tape of Eddie Farrell's story of his early days in the Yukon.
Well, I think we were 9 days making the trip from here to Valdez. There wasn't much of a trailer. There wasn't any bridges at them time. We had to ferry and ford the streams as best we could, wait till the right time of the year, the day to get across the streams.
Well, Eddie, let me interrupt you here. Was there any kind of a road at all in them days?
It was blazed out in most places, yes. And
what year was that now?
That was in, I think it was in 11.
In 11, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know there wasn't much of a road then.
Yeah. Oh, we finally got to Valdez in 9 days, I think. And there was quite a crowd gathered around us there when we got to Valdez. And one fellow came up to me and he said, did you come over the trail? I said, no, I came through it. The mud was axle deep in lots of places, you know.
And, how did the town was Valdez when you landed?
Oh, I should judge maybe 2,000.
2,000 people,
yeah. There was quite a little quartz excitement there at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I had those pictures back. You could describe them. I've got 200 negatives taken in Valdez from 1903 to 1917.
Yeah.
You'd probably recognize some of the characters.
Well, probably would, yeah. We stayed there for prospected on a little quartz vein until it pinched out. We went in, run in a tunnel on it until it pinched out. And then we went from there to the copper country and prospected the rest of the winter for copper.
Over on the Copper River Valley.
That's right, on the Copper River Valley.
Around Kennecott.
Yeah, yep. In through that section. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
But this trip down from when we left Whitehorse down going into Dawson, I ran into a kind of a funny layout there. I ran into an Irishman. He was stopped on the trail. He was pulling a sleigh along with him. And I stopped and talked to him. He finally said he was from Boston. And we kept on talking, and he was pretty well discouraged. And he finally said, if I was only back in Boston, he said, I'd promised God and the people I'd try and get along with the silver, never mind the gold. Well, the next spring, I came back to Fairbanks. Worked around here for a while and then took a lease out on Pedro Creek. I worked there that summer, and that was 14. In the fall, me and a fellow by the name of Lon Doggett, you probably remember him.
Yeah,
we stampeded to Livengood.
Yeah.
Went out from here on the little narrow gauge railroad and fixed up our packs at Olness. We had 80 pounds apiece and our rifles. And started out, we didn't know exactly where we were going, but there was a fellow named Wheeler. Probably know, you know him too.
Yeah,
probably.
I knew Wheeler, yeah.
He came in and had reported a strike at Livengood.
Mm.
Well, we started off and we were 13 days making the trip, but we got away off of the trail and had to come back up the West Fork of the Cholavana. We got in there this evening, and they'd Livengood and some other fellow had just bedrocked a hole. Well, it didn't look very discouraging. It didn't look very encouraging. We had to take a microscope to see the fine gold. But anyway, we staked, and we staked on the creek flat, and there was not a thing there. But the ones that came later, there was no other place to stake, so they went back on the benches and they got nothing. And the next bunch after them, we went back still further, and they were the ones that struck it. They got
so that would be what, about the third tier?
Third tier, yes.
And some of this prospecting, Eddie, is they say gold is where you find it.
Well, nigger, the nigger says where you don't find it.
I guess so. Yeah. Well, that day's alive and good. Well, did you get in on any ground that amounted to anything there, Eddie?
Enliven good?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't worth nothing. Hmm. No, just that little fine gold that we.
Yeah.
Well, from there, I came back to Fairbanks, and that spring, that was 15. You'll remember that, I guess, the big railroad celebration.
Yeah, I remember it very well.
I stayed here till after that was all over, and then I started out to make the 300-mile walk to Ruby.
You to walk it?
Yeah.
Well, did you walk it?
I did. I made it.
My God, that's quite a, I was wondering how you crossed the Yukon.
Well, it was still, the river was still froze.
Oh, I see, yeah.
I went down on the ice, you see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you're about the only man that ever walked from Fairbanks to Ruby. I never heard of anybody else.
Well, I don't know. I suppose there was others that you don't know of.
Well, you mean to say by dog team, maybe?
Most of them went by dog team,
but you
of course.
Just went on foot all the way.
I walked every foot of it.
Quite a hike.
Yeah. What kind of equipment did you carry when you made the trip?
Well, I used shoe packs from my feet and the ordinary mitts. And, there was roadhouses.
Did you have snowshoes too?
No, I didn't pack any snowshoes. You see, the mail used to run there I think it was every week.
Yeah.
And I didn't encourage any. Find any unbroken trail. It was a pretty good trail all the way. Yeah. Well, I got into Ruby and I didn't have much money left, so it was quite a little boiler work there, and I got in on that and made some money right away. Then I got a hold of, bought some ground there and made a little money on that. Then I started mining for myself and made some money on that. And from there, I went up to Mason Creek. That's about 40 miles below Tanano.
Yeah.
Stayed there, I think, pretty close to 5 years, so my partner died there.
Well, Walter Fisher was in there, wasn't he?
Walter Fisher was on the next creek above us on Grant Creek.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I was on Mason Creek.
Yeah. What was your partner's name?
Bill Warren.
Bill Warren was your partner there?
Yes, sir. Yeah, him and his wife was there. With
yeah.
And in 1930, I went to Rampart and bought out the Idaho Bar, which was another kind of a failure. We could make kind of wages there, but that was about all. And so we abandoned that pretty soon and bought in on Little Manook, a fellow by the name of Jack Elliott and me. Worked on that for several years.
There was little money there, wasn't
there? Oh, yes. Little Manook was a good creek.
Yeah.
It had been worked, Little Manook had been worked since 96.
Yeah.
1896. The ground we had was recorded in 1896.
Yeah. Well, did you happen to know any of the early day characters around Rampart? You didn't know. Did you ever see Rex Beach?
Oh, yes.
You seen him?
Yes, I seen Rex Beach.
When he was quite a young man.
Yes, and I was to his cabin several times. Of course, he wasn't living there then.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, you never seen London in the Yukon?
No, I never got to meet Jack London. Mm-hmm. No, I never did. He was always some other place.
Not to get you off your line of thought now, Eddie, I was going to, just while we were talking about these early day characters, I was going to say, now over in the Livengood country, did you ever know Jack McCord?
Oh, yes, well.
Knew him well.
Oh,
well,
yes.
I understand he's still alive and doing fairly well. You remember he got a concession over there on around Kodiak Island, this cattle business and what have you?
Yes. Well, I saw Jack here, too, in Fairbanks.
How long ago?
Oh, it seems to me it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's when
he was in here. Yeah,
yeah.
The cattle king, they called
it. Yeah. Well, did you know Pedro in the early days?
Oh, yes, Pedro.
Yeah.
I know.
now.
Well, Ed, you can continue now.
All right. Well, Ed, after you come back up to these parts here, that is the Fairbanks area from the Ruby country, I was wondering, did you take in this stampede over on the Yukon, what was it?
The fish wheel stampede.
Fish wheel stampede, yes.
Yes, I did. I didn't think anything of it for a starter, but finally those reports came here that that they'd found pay 60 feet or so back from the beach. So I told my wife, I says, well, I guess it's about time I was getting over there then. So got that kind of pay over there. So I went over. Took a plane. That was the easiest stampede I was ever on in my life. We just got off of the plane and we were right on the ground. Well, there was a party over there, had a little drill. And we got together and I got this drill going and we went down 50 feet. Never got a color, never got a speck of gold. Well, everything was beginning to slump around there then. There was a store there and there was a kind of a speakeasy and a restaurant and so on. Well, I stayed around there, I guess, 2 weeks and finally came back to Fairbanks.
Well, Ed, wasn't that deal somewhat of a promotion proposition for these airplanes, or what was the deal? Who started
what was their names? The two boys, their father had a store there, Carl. Boys, it was their fish wheel that was supposed to brought up this gold.
Well, was there anything authentic about it?
I don't think so. I think it was all, I think if there was anything at all, it was some kind of copper ground out of some of the bearings or something. But I never saw any of the gold that's supposed to come out of there.
Well, you know, them stories, them stampedes, how they get started, sometimes it's kind of a peculiar deal. It's like a snowball, and you roll it to the right time when the temperature's right, the bigger it gets and whatnot. But, of course, that fish wheel stampede, you couldn't just blame that on nobody. What I mean to say, there was some talk that it was kind of a promotion deal around here, transportation companies, but maybe that wasn't the story.
I don't think so, Frank. I don't think anybody was promoting anything there. In fact, a lot of people thought the storekeeper over there, Carl, I believe his name was, had promoted it, but I went into it as best I could, and I don't think Carl had anything to do with it, because he spent money there doing a little prospecting himself. And, I think it was just a kind of a happenstance myself.
Yeah, well, Ed, was that the last stampede you took part in?
Well, no, not the last stampede. I just last winter I was practically stampeding over on Goose Creek. That's about 30 miles out of Livengood.
Oh, yes, I heard of that.
I and Red Anderson moved a drill in there last winter and did quite a little drilling. I'd been in there the year before and sank a hole or two. But we didn't find anything that was encouraging there. To me, anyhow.
Well, Ed, I must say that you're one of the original old stampeders of the early days that's still with the country and still prospecting, and you have that get up and go, even regardless of age, and that's something that sure is an honor to the pioneers of Alaska to think that we have people in the country that are still here trying to develop Alaska. That is, these men that blazed the trail in the early days. And it's been a pleasure, Ed, to talk to you and reminisce
over these early days?
Shut it off, please. Well, I want to terminate it then. I want to tell you about
just a minute.
This interview here with Ed Farrell. Ed Farrell has been elected by the Pioneers as King Regent for 1962 here. He's giving a little history of his life here in Alaska. And present is Frank Young, Mrs. Farrell, and Harry Hughes in the interview with Ed Farrell. And this is January the 24th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska. January 25th. He's going to tell us about a friend of his, Ben Falls, an old-timer that I know quite a bit about, too.
I came back from Goose Creek last spring with my cat, and Ben had some ground on Wilbur Creek, and we went in together and put in a cutout there last summer. And there is still some more ground there to put in, I guess, and maybe we'll go back there next summer. Though I haven't give up the mining by a long way. I have a lot of creeks yet that I want to investigate, especially along this new Nome Road now. And I expect next summer I'm going to do a little prospecting along that line.
How old is Ben Falls?
Ben, I think, is 83 or 84 years old.
So you can see what an old man can do in this country yet.
Well,
how old are you, Ed?
Well, I'll be 80 next summer.
80 next summer. Yeah. Now these young guys, they're all chee-chalkers. They got no ambition, have they?
No, you talk to them, they can't see the light in prospecting. Yeah. Most of them, if they can't see where they're going to get a check every week or 2 weeks, why, they're not much interested in it.
No ambition.
No. Well, have no ambition in that line, anyway.
But there's a million opportunities for anybody that wants to look for them here.
Oh, I think so. I think there's lots of country here yet that'll stand a lot of prospecting. Oh, I have creeks that I've did a little prospecting on and got good prospects, but I don't say there's pay yet, but it'll sure stand a little more work. Oh.
Well, you want to terminate this now?
How about Dawson?
Ed's going to revert back to Dawson in a few minutes.
There was one thing that I always thought was kind of funny in Dawson. There was a building there, they called it the Exchange. And they used to have a little show there. And the boys that felt a little gay would go into the boxes and buy drinks for the girls and so on. And the beer slingers, as we call them, would come and take the order, and then they'd take it maybe clear the length of the hall with this fellow's poke, weigh out whatever gold they wanted to for the drinks and bring it back. And I always thought it was kind of funny that but they didn't get gypped a whole lot on that deal. And one time in there was one of the big operators on El Dorado in one of the boxes, and this Kate came out and sang.
Klondike Kate.
Yeah, Klondike Kate came out and sang, and the gang in the audience threw up some small nuggets, you know, on the stage. And Jim Hall was sitting in one of the boxes up above, and he threw out a poke, I would imagine, with $500 or $600 in it. It went down kaplunk on the stage, and Kate looked up at him and says, "Well, thank you, Jim. Come down and kiss me."
For $500.
Yeah.
Well, are there any of the people alive around Dawson today that you know or remember?
Well, not that I record. Of course, I haven't been there since 19.
Well, you remember John Carbo?
Yes, I do.
And Van Bieber?
Yes.
And Jerusalem Joe Canatus?
Yes, yeah.
He passed away on June the 9th last year.
I see. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. No, I haven't been. I always wanted to go back there and see the old place.
Just come back this summer with us.
I should have, yes. But I'm always kind of...
August the 17th, there'll be a celebration this year, 17th to the 20th.
Well, if I can arrange it, I might do that. But I'm always kind of busy at that time of the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, play it back to Eddie now.
Well, I want to thank Eddie for this interview. And this is Pioneers of Alaska, Igloo 4, tape recording for history. And I'm taking these tapes, Frank Young and I are, for the Igloo. And if anyone wants to use this tape, they must come and get a legal waiver from you before they can use it. You see? There's nobody can take these without a written consent of you to use. Not even us. That's the law.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
This is Mrs. Farrell, who's going to say a few words on the tape about her life. Now, you tell your full name.
Well, I'm Rebecca Farrell, and I married Ed Farrell in 1946. And I came up into Fairbanks in 1945, and Ed had already had a connection with my former husband, who died in 1944. And I came up to try to get a lease on some of the ground that Ed had down on Golden Creek. And much to my surprise, I was proposed to. So the next year, in 1946, I came back up here after having gone outside. I worked out at the university in Montana. I was a nurse out there. And I came back the following year, 1946, and Ed and I were married.
Mm-hmm. What was your maiden name now?
Well, my maiden name was Rebecca Evans.
Rebecca Evans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I was had been formerly married to a mining man over in the Nome country. Mm-hmm. And he had a dredge down on, his name was Suksdorf, and he had a dredge down on Solomon River, about 50 miles out of Nome.
And you're a member of the auxiliary?
Yes, I'm a member, I'm charter member of the auxiliary number 8.
Here at Fairbanks?
Here at Fairbanks.
Now, do you have any family of your own? No family of your own?
I have no children.
Have you any brothers or sisters alive?
No, my mother and two sisters are all gone, and my former husband is dead. The only relatives I have are two nephews outside.
All right. Thank you, Mrs. Farrell, for that little bit of information.